Hi guys, this is the last episode for season 3. Thank you all so much for your support this season. We're also especially proud to be included in Dine Diaspora's annual 31 Days of Black Women in Food as part of Women's History Month. See the show notes or our social media pages for a full list of all the incredible women that were included for this award. We're wrapping up the season with Chef Akudo's story. It's a two-part series that shares his journey from being a novice cook to a high-end chef, and his goal of supporting community while doing so. We ended up speaking for over 2 hours, and so the audio has been edited in a way that allows you to grasp the meat of our conversation, I guess, versus our personal yapping, and focus on the story. Also releasing this in two parts. Part one will focus on his early days, and then part two on his foray into professional cooking and the work he's doing with his relatively new cookery school in the UK. Enjoy. This week, or I guess today, I'm thrilled to have Akudo in the guest chair. I'm trying to think how we first met. Like, I think I emailed you for Africa Food Week a couple of years ago, and he enthusiastically responded yes, having never met me. I was like, okay, this is going to be you. It was one of the most interesting, enthusiastic responses I got. So I was like, and since then I followed like the work that you've been doing. And I thought of you because, just one, because of the conversations we had when I was in London, and then two, with what you're doing now with your cookery school. I think it's an interesting story to share, and I think everyone will see as we sort of go through the topics I wanted to discuss today, because it ties into a lot that's happening with the West African food landscape. So I think it's interesting, and I'm actually I don't know if the right word is proud that we have some a facility, an establishment like this that's working to provide a standard for chefs and cooks who are looking to do work in the space. So excited to speak to you today. Let's start with you sharing. I know a little bit about you, but for those that are listening, why don't you share about who you are, where you're from, your background a little bit.
Yeah, okay. For those that don't know, my name is Akudo Agoke. It's a short form. My full name is actually Akudo Sochim, which is a girl's name, and I still don't
understand. Oh, really?
I still don't understand why my dad did that to me. Yeah, because if you meet any, most Nigerians that have heard the name Akudo before, they're always puzzled when I say that's my name, because they probably have female friends that have that name.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, it's not a very common name, so most people don't know. But two people who know are either Igbo people, people from the Igbo tribe that know that, oh, that's usually a girl's name, or people who've had friends, female friends, named Akudo, and then there's that shock of what? Yeah, but my dad did it like that. He gave me a boy's name. He gave me a girl's name and gave my sister a boy's name.
Oh, wow.
He's been asked why he did that by so many different people, and his response is always because I can.
Oh, I guess because from the tribe that I'm from in Ghana, the Ewe tribe, we actually have unisex names, so like our names can be used for both boys and girls, which is not typical. I'm trying to think, it's not typical in the Ghanaian sense. And so if you meet someone from the Ewe tribe, if you meet a girl that's called Selassie and a guy that's called Selassie, so we keep it interesting that way too.
Yeah, well, it's I think anyways, because I think from my background, I grew up with my dad, because he explained to me that a name is a blessing, and because I think African names generally mean something. Mm-hmm. So my name, for instance, means peaceful wealth. So he brought me up understanding that a name is a blessing. I was born in Nigeria. Myself and all my sisters, we were born in Nigeria. And then I think my dad was a frequent traveler, because he worked for a company and he was the I think it was like the managing director for that company, and it was a big multinational company back then, if I remember well, John Holt, because they dealt with a lot of other big companies like Yamaha and the rest. So he used to travel a lot, and because I believe their headquarters was based in Liverpool, so he used to go back and forth to the UK a lot than any other country. And he just sort of liked it, and I think he just thought to himself, like, you know what, my family would probably have a better life here. And then one day he just sort of decided, all right, I'm gonna just apply for, because he was in and out so frequently, so eventually he was getting to a point where he wasn't applying for, like, what do you call it, visitor's visa, and he was just like applying for like a work permit.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so eventually it got to the point where he could then apply as a leave to remain. And he just thought, you know what, I'm just going to come here and I'm just going to bring my family here. And then for us, it was just sort of how it was. And then we started to visit when we were younger, when we were kids. And then eventually, then the procedure to eventually just move the family here.
Then what was that? Do you remember what the transition was? Because around how old were you? Was it a tough transition for you coming from?
No, well, to be honest, it wasn't really a tough transition, because my dad was traveling a lot and always busy. So we were kind of kids that we grew up understanding that, yeah, dad's not around a lot, so get used to it. And then we moved around a lot quite well. Like, I remember, like, before I was born, they lived in a house where my older sister was born. We moved. The house I was in, we moved again, and then after we moved, then we moved again. I think we moved about five times.
Oh,
We got used to
wow.
moving from an early age. And then obviously with my dad not being around a lot, and my mom was also an entrepreneur back then. She used to run like this little shops and everything. So we used to have, you know, most African homes have like a maid at home that helps out. So we pretty much just got used to them not being around and we being shuffled around too much. So transitioning from here to the UK was just, we just saw it like the same thing we've been going through, but on a much bigger scale.
That's interesting. So then how, especially as a guy, how did you start like cooking, or how, where did your interest in cooking and food come from? Because typically, and I think I can even speak to the Nigerian experience, just based on the number of people I've spoken to, and my experience with them is that a lot of the times it's women or girls who are encouraged to be in the kitchen, and those who end up, doing food, like that's sort of where their interest or their expertise or skill set starts from. Did you start cooking early, or like where did your interest in food come from? Especially our food, I should say, too.
Yeah, so the funny thing about my experience is that I started cooking late, like super late, which is which most people don't believe when I first say it, and they're like, nah, like you can't at least be at this level and you're telling me you only started cooking like what, a couple of years. And I'm like, nah, really, I really, because like you said, it's how it is back in Nigeria and in African cultures as well. Some African cultures are different where they don't have that kind of gender roles. But in like West Africa, especially like Nigeria, Ghana, is the women that are currently encouraged. So, and when I was growing up, my mom actually used to kick me out of the kitchen. She actually used to say, the kitchen is not a man's place. And I've got, she would say, the kitchen is not a man's place. I've got other jobs for you. And I'll be sent to like either do the garden outside or sweep the compound or wash the car. Like, I would be given jobs like that. So I would be the one to like wake up really early in the morning and then see dishes in the sink and then try and help by cleaning up the dishes or try and learn a dish or two just to try and help out in the kitchen. But my mom, you know, she'd be impressed by it when she wakes up and stuff like that. But, you know, on a normal day, if she saw me going into the kitchen, she would always be like, nope, get out of my kitchen, kitchen is not a man's place. Get out of my kitchen. And to be honest, to be fair, the little odd jobs I used to do in the kitchen, I just used to do them just to win my mom's favor, because I knew I wanted. I knew that I'm going to ask for something towards the end of the day, or I wanted money for something. So the kitchen, I got used to it being not my area.
Right. Which is, it's so unfortunate, though, you know, when you think about it, because I think it's a basic skill that everybody needs to have.
I say this all the time. It's a life skill. Like, mm-hmm. it's not, and I will tell you why I'm a big promoter of the fact that it is a life skill, because this is also another reason why I eventually ended up in this journey that led me into food. Because what happened was, when my family started to move to the UK, my older sister and I were doing, I was doing my A-levels, she was doing her foundation at the time. And I just rang up my mom and I just said, hey, listen, you used to kick me out of the kitchen every time when I was growing up. And now you're going to pay for that, okay? I need to cook. So you're going to be on the phone with me every day when I get back from uni. You need to teach me how to cook, because I'm tired. I want some pounded yam. I want some jollof rice. I want some food. I'm tired of eating burgers and smoked turkey, please. And so my mom would call me. She would call me every night, every evening. I would let her know, okay, I'm back from uni. She would call me. And this was when there was no WhatsApp. And you couldn't just text internationally, because you'd incur some serious cost. So this was the days of the calling card.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
We had to buy a calling card, dial that long-ass number on the calling card, scratch it to see what your card was, yeah. And it would tell you $10 or $20, and you would then load out and call and then wait for my days. And then if the call was getting too long, you had to rush out and get another calling card. So these were suffering times.
It's so funny how technology has advanced, right? Like when you think back, oh my goodness, the things we used to do. I'm sounding like an old person.
The crazy times. So my mom would call and she would direct me. And this was at 2008.
So she was teaching you how to cook in general, or specifically Nigerian food?
Like, I would pick something. She'd be like, okay, what do you want to make? And I'd say, I want stew. I really feel like stew. And I want to make stew. I saw, like, she tried to get me to understand, okay, how to cook rice first. The first time I cooked rice, it was an absolute tragedy. I was so confident. I looked at the rice and I'm like, it's rice. How hard can it be? And it was burnt at the bottom. The rice was mushy. I don't even know. I don't know how you can burn rice. It's mushy and yet still uncooked at the same time. Like, it just didn't make sense. I was like, how did I even
see if you had grown up in the kitchen cooking, like, rice is the basic. Like, I feel like most girls can cook rice like with their eyes closed, just because we had to do it so much.
You get what I mean? Like, rice was like, well, I could, that was out, like, and we're talking like 2008, this is like, what, just 12 years ago?
Yeah.
And I couldn't cook to save myself. So obviously the first time I cooked rice, failed it, like, terrible. And then I told my mom and she was like, did you wash the rice? I'm like, no. I was like, what do you mean wash the rice? She's like, you have to give the rice a couple of swirls, get rid of starch and stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'll try doing that later. Did that, messed up the rice. And she's like, you know, what did you do? Did you have the flame? So she kept guiding me. Did you have the flames on high? I was like, yeah. She's like, okay, you don't leave the flames on high when you're cooking rice. So she would guide me like that. And I would keep trying. Bear in mind, every time I failed, I had to just eat some crappy ass food.
Yeah, because you're a student still, right? Because you can't be throwing out that food like all the time.
I can't be throwing it out.
Yeah.
And I pack this lunch and I try and take it to school. And so imagine I'm at uni, I'm trying to eat my lunch. My lunch tastes like, you know, the devil's vomit. My friends are like, oh, what do you have there? And obviously I don't want them to taste it because it tastes like crap. So I didn't have to fake and be like, nah, it's just, you know, like.
How did you go from that level of cooking to even, not even before you were properly trained? Because I remember discovering like you on Instagram, and your plating and all that you did was like way above the level of people that have had years and years of experience. How do you go from like, I cannot cook rice for the life of me to not even just a basic food? Because I remember part of why I, you know, when I discovered you, I continued to follow you, was that you were also coming up with creative ways already back then of presenting and like combining different ingredients in sort of unexpected ways. So how do you go from that to, from, you know, from not knowing how to boil rice to the point where you're, you know, doing super interesting?
It was okay. It goes back to when my mom was still teaching me. So after so many failed attempts, she eventually, the first recipe I've mastered is she teaches me like how to boil chicken.
Okay.
So, you know, the way Nigerians or West Africans boil chicken, you know, with the onions and the ginger, garlic, curry powder and all of that. Where you're cooking the chicken, but at the same time, you're making chicken stock to use for whatever the main dish is that you're going to cook. So that was the first thing I got right. I boiled this chicken and tasted the chicken, and the chicken tasted nice. And I was like, oh, I think I got this. So that was just sort of how, that was where the improvement started. That was where I would say the excitement with cooking started.
Started, yeah. But that was mostly though also improvement in taste, right? Because you also have a distinct like presentation style.
Yeah. So then there was no presentation style. Then I was still in my slap it on a plate and just
survival mode than anything else.
Yeah, okay, so it was just that. But then aside from her, I would have friends then come back at home. They would taste my food at school. So it then became a thing where eventually I moved out of my apartment and I moved into like a bigger house with some of my friends. Mm-hmm. And we shared with them. So it then became a thing where when it was time to cook, my housemates would always be like, yo, could you whip up something? And you know, you're the guy. You're the guy who goes. And I just became this guy who would go into this kitchen and be like, okay, what do we have? What can we work with? And come up with something. And I just became that guy that was trusted, like, yeah, let you know, like, come on, man. So I would be the one, I became like mom of the house, like, yeah, you go out there, buy me mince meat. Right. You, how much do we have? Pull our funds together. We realize we're all poor kids. We only have like $5. Okay, you go get this, you go get that. And then would make a meal out of it. And then that was what, and then that was where it was like, you know, he started getting to me like, wow, you know, I can put stuff together.
Then you moved back to the UK. Okay.
Then I moved back to the UK. And it just sort of stayed there. Obviously I had perfected my okra game at the time. When I moved back and I made okra for my sisters. So I remember my sisters would be like they didn't want my mom making okra. They wanted me making it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my mom would always, until this day, she still says, her favorite sentence is, the student can't be better than the master. I taught you. So whatever success you're getting from your journey, it's thanks to me.
I could see that. I don't think my mom would ever agree that I cook anything better than her. So.
My mom would. I mean, she would indirectly admit that, oh yeah, it's great.
Good, yeah, exactly.
She would say, of course it's great. Who taught you how to cook? That's how she'd say
it. Yeah.
So I moved back to the UK and then, you know, sharing a couple, so it was still that kind of housemate setting. So I just kind of cooked for my housemates, this, that, and that. And then that was what it was.
Had you started your Instagram or like blogging in Canada, like when did you start sharing like what you were cooking with, you know, so, on social?
Oof, like that was, you know what? That was another super late one. I joined Instagram 2012.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And my sister went, and I think Instagram had been around before then. But my sister had been bugging me. I think Instagram came out either early that year or last year or 2 years ago. I don't know. But
Okay.
my sister had been bugging me like, get on Instagram, get on Instagram. But I ran a fashion blog then. That was why I joined Instagram.
Oh, I
So,
see. Fashion, okay.
yeah, so then it was just a fashion blog. It was just something I became up. But then I started watching like cookery shows as well.
Oh yeah, those are helpful or inspirational, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, now it's like obviously now it's 2012. The internet has blown up. You know, YouTube's big, Instagram's big, social media, Facebook, everything. So, you know, Jamie Oliver, what do you call it? Aston Bloomington, all them guys were making big names for themselves at that point in time. Gordon Ramsay, big one, coming out telling everybody to F off, you know, big things. So there were so many online that I'd watched. And I remember when I watched those things, the one thing that would always be in my mind was not the food. It was, oh my God, look at that kitchen.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
The
so I was always
size of the kitchen, or like all the equipment, or
like the equipment, the kitchen, and I think, man, like you know what? So I would say stuff like, man, you know what? My plan in life would probably be to just make enough money so that I can retire and have this big kitchen and have this big library of cookery books and just keep cooking and trying recipes as much as I'd like. And that was it. That was the dream. So fast forward to 2014. I moved away to Wales for a year to work. I was working with Office for National Statistics at that point in time. I was working as a data analyst.
okay.
So far from food, like there was
Yeah, I was
that
gonna say, did you have
point
it
in
in
time,
the
like
back of your mind that you were going to do feel like this wasn't
no.
necessary?
And
Oh,
this
I
was
see.
2014. This was like what, 6 years ago. Even then, if
Yeah.
you told me, oh, you're gonna be a chef in like a couple of years, I would be like, what? What, fam? Please. So it was far from my mind. I would cook. I would make like a joke of a cookery video and just mock it, put it online, and people. Some of my followers then would laugh at it, and my followers then were just friends. I was one of those people that used to like watch their Instagram post back then and just wait for it to get to 11 likes so that it could turn to 11 likes and not show people's names. So that was it. You know, there was nothing about cooking. I still cooked the same things then. By that time, I'd learned to cook. I had met my now partner, my baby mama. I remember taking her to a Nigerian restaurant in 2013 and had her trying egusi. Because she's Jamaican, heritage Jamaican. She's a British born Jamaican.
Oh, got it.
So I took her to a Nigerian restaurant, had her try the egusi. She loved egusi, and you know she loved egusi so much that we would literally go to like every time she came down for visit, we'll go to a restaurant to have egusi. You know, when she got pregnant with our first child, that was one of our cravings. Egusi was like a terrible craving. It was such a bad craving. She wanted it. There was a time she wanted it, but all the restaurants were closed. And I remember how angry she was. She was so angry. I was afraid she was like gonna stab me or something.
I was gonna say, but by this point though, wouldn't you have learned how to make it if that
No,
was
I
like
haven't learned. I don't learn how to. I did not know how to make it at this point in time. Actually, before she was pregnant, I had tried to make it, and it just it
did
yeah it
not
just didn't
okay.
It just didn't turn out, you know. Like, on it, my ancestors would not have been proud.
Got
So,
it. Okay. So you were a data analyst, and then like what was the aha moment that said, okay, I'm done with this and I should probably, train professionally or, spend my full time
yeah,
now in
so
the
it
world of
was.
food?
So we were looking for a place at the time. We were in an apartment. And I just thought, like, you know, no, I'm working now. I'm making money. I want us to get to a house, so that we could, you know, so that, you know, I wanted us to have a bigger space. And I wanted Noah to be able to have more like a back garden and more more space to just sort of move around. So we found a house. We found this house, and when we went there, I remember the first thing she said to me, because I was in Wales at the time. She went to check the house, so I remember the first thing she said to me was, "You're gonna love this place." I said, "Why?" She said, "You're gonna love it, especially the kitchen." I was like, "All right, cool, no problem." Came back and I realized, oh my God, such a lovely kitchen. I've got my island. It's big, spacious, so many cupboards. And I just really liked it. What happened was one day I just realized, hey, you know what? I've actually got a kitchen that looks like what I'd hope my dream kitchen would look like. So I'm like, you know what? Let me enjoy the fact that I now have a decent kitchen with an island and so much space. So I decided I was gonna just surprise the missus, go out, shop for some things, buy something, and then I would cook for her, and I'll surprise her. So I remember I came home and I made this pasta, this seafood pasta, and I made it with some lobster tail. And it was a recipe I'd seen somewhere before. I couldn't remember where I'd seen it. And I just thought, oh, I wanted to try it out one day. And I said, okay, today I can actually try it. So I went and I made it. And it was on the 13th of November 2015. And if you go on my Instagram page and you scroll all the way down to my early pictures, it is, I believe, number six there. I remember I put that up on Instagram and I said, oh, ask about me. And I put it up on Facebook and I was like, oh, made this surprise for the missus. And I just remember I got like two comments on it. And then, or I think that I got a few comments on it, and people were like, oh, that looks amazing. And somebody was like, oh, I'd like some. Somebody was like, oh my God, you should cook for me. And then it blew up on Facebook, and people were like, whoa, like, yo, you know, chef things, da 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 da. And I remember just thinking to myself, like, you know, it's just a random recipe I'd seen, whatever, da da da. But people started saying stuff like, whoa, I didn't even know that was you. I thought you were posting some random food from like some foodies page or a chef page. And I was like, oh, really? Like, there were people like, wow, you made that actually. So from then it just clicked. Like I was just blown away by everything everyone was saying on Instagram, on Facebook, to people who tried it. And then the next day I just went out, I got more stuff, and then I cooked again. And then the day after that I got more stuff, and then I cooked again. And then
Cooked
it just
again
became,
for your family or just
yeah, but like for my family. So it just became like a thing. I would finish work. Like I started going to work like super early so that I could leave work early. I would quickly rush to the store or to the market there. I would pick up stuff and I'd go home and I'd cook before they got back. And they would come back and I'd be like, oh wow, you made. And every day was like, wow, like, whoa, my God, like, you're really into this cooking stuff. And like, wow, you're really doing a great job. I'll post it on Instagram. I'll post it on Facebook. And I think what got me on Instagram was it was the first time where every day I'm posting pictures and I was getting like 11, 12 likes. And I was so hyped, like, yo. I was like, yes, no more names showing under my stuff, just the number of likes. And I was so hyped, like, yes, like this is the life. I'm famous now, mama, we made it.
But
How would this look? I don't just want to slap it on there. I want it to look nice. So I would think about, like, you know, how it look. I would try and plate it real nice. But then what started to happen was people started to, the response started to die down. And there was not as much likes coming through. There was not as much comments coming through. People weren't that buzzed. But what I just realized was I was already into it. So I wasn't even fazed. Like, I wasn't even.
by the response. Yeah, that's a good sign that it wasn't just about the buzz, right?
Yeah. The idea of being a chef, the idea of having a food blog, people would tell me, oh, start a food blog. And I'm like, nah. I just like to cook. I don't
And you
have
were
time
still
for that.
working, right? You were still working as a
I'm still
data.
working like full time. I'm still working. I used to go to work super early. I take advantage of my flexi time, and just sort of come in early, work, and then dip, go to the market, pick up stuff, and then I became very adventurous, like early enough. Like I think even after like the fourth thing that I cooked, I just didn't want to follow anybody's recipe anymore. I just
It's
wanted to
time
do
to
my
do
own
your own
thing.
thing, yeah.
Yeah, and it was very foolish of me, to be honest, because it was very early, and there were a lot of failures. There were a lot of successes, but also a lot of failures. And I used to spend like 16, 17 hours a weekend in the kitchen.
Wow.
Like,
This
not
is
even a
just
weekend.
you developing. This is not even, you don't even have a client base yet, right? You're
I
just
didn't, so
cooking
this
and
is,
perfecting for your for
I
your
didn't have a
own.
blog. I didn't have a YouTube channel. I didn't have anything. I just wanted to get better at it. Eventually, I went back to like reading recipes because I realized I didn't understand how to balance flavors. I didn't understand how to layer flavors. I didn't understand, what to do. And I needed that basic information. So I'd go back and I'd read recipes and I'd question everything in the recipe. But why? Why? Why this? Why that? Like I would read a recipe and the recipe would say, when you're doing poached eggs, don't salt your water because if you salt the water increases the density of the salt increases the density of the water, and then your poached eggs will be ruined. And I was like,
Oh,
right.
I didn't even know this. Actually, a good tip for everyone who's listening.
No, so that's like a typical thing they say, but I realized earlier on that to me that like that's a myth. So I would research that. That
Oh.
was something like a lot of people accepted. But I challenged, I was like, why? That isn't like why?
Why?
Like what's the science behind it? Like why does salt in water and higher density of water, like why does that make the poach? So I would research like what does salt do to water? What is like if water has like a higher density, what happens? If this lady
Essentially
salted,
experimenting.
yeah, so I was like, if she salted her water and I saw her put the egg in and the eggs like just dropped straight to the bottom, then that must be a problem. That there's a problem there because if salt does actually increases the density of the water, then the egg should have float. So what I don't understand, the opposite is going on here. I wanted to know
Right.
why is this going on? That then became a thing for me, which then helped me develop my own recipes because I started to understand what happens when you mix this with this? What happens when you combine this with this? Like, what's going on when this chicken is frying? And so stuff like that. Then that's why, if you then look at like my Instagram later on, I then started to come up with like my own
Different
recipes.
unique recipes, yeah, exactly.
Or
Interesting.
I would take like a typical recipe, but I would like add my own twist to it. And as I did that, I got better at plating as well. And I wasn't following any food blog on Instagram.
You were just doing your own thing,
I was
essentially.
really sort of doing my own
So
thing.
we're actually I'm looking at the time. We're running out of time, so I want to make sure we speak about what you're doing now, and then we can tie in aspects of your training to that as we move along. So right now you started the KDU, am I saying that right, cookery school?
Yes.
So can you tell us first of all what does KDU mean, and then just a little bit about the school, why you decided to start it after doing the chef and becoming Instagram famous.
Well, so like I said, like my Instagram started to build up with the following, and then I started to get messages from actual chefs, who were like quite shocked at that point in time. So, asking me questions like, "Are you really self-taught?" And I'm like, "Yeah, why?" And they would say, "Oh, because you're doing basically almost the same thing we are, and we spent like years in school." And I'm like, oh, I didn't realize. I think I'd look at a page and still think. So then I started to get invites to like supper clubs. And I remember the first supper club I ever did was from Toowoomba.
Oh yeah, sure. I remember
Toowoomba's
the
kitchen.
Christmas
So
kitchen,
Toowoomba
yeah.
was actually the person who got me on it. She was like, you've never done a supper? I was like, no, I don't even know what that is. And she was like, oh, okay, you know what? Why don't you come on board with me and let's do one together? So Toowoomba was actually the first person who got me to do the first supper club, and I did it with her. I got a taste of what that was like, and then decided that I was going to start doing my own. And then there was Imotera as well in Nigeria.
I remember Imoteda, yeah. She came. I had her food when she came to Toronto, I think, for a pop-up
Yeah.
event or something along those lines. She was doing a tour of some kind, yeah.
Yeah, so she had just started the Nigerian
Fusion food tour, I think that's what it was called, right? Like NFFT or something like that.
NFT. Yeah, so she had just started that, and then she wanted me to come on board because I was making this spice at the time. So she wanted me to come on board with the spice and just sort of see what it was like. But also like my first interaction with like a professionally trained chef. Like I've been speaking to them before, but Imoteda was the first one to say, "Come to my event, come see what it's like." So with Tokumbo and then Imoteda's thing just gave me a massive wealth of knowledge, and then I started to do that. So fast forward a couple of years later on, I'm doing supper clubs now. I'm getting more and more confident in my cooking and stuff. I'm starting to develop more and more. Eventually, come 2017, I decide that's it. This is what I want to do. I want to cook. Like, this is what I want to do. So at this point in time, I was a senior data analyst for HMRC. So imagine how shocked my manager is when I turn up and I'm like, "There's my notice. I'm leaving. I'm going to be a chef." And he's like, "Wait, what? What? Sorry, what? Like, what's going on?" So listen, my manager is going crazy, and he's asking me questions like, "Did anyone disrespect you? Tell me the real reason why you're leaving. Who is it? I'll sort it out. What's going on?" And I'm like, "Hey, chill, chill, chill. Like, don't worry about it. It's none of that. It's a dream that's just been festering, and I just want to give it a shot. I'll regret it if I never do this. So I just want to do this." And then, so at the same time, I decided to do that. I planned I was just going to quit. I was going to get all my plans together for supper clubs, keep, blogging with the food, try and do some events, accessible, and just try and, be this, big private chef just doing his thing. And then a gentleman reached out. His name was Aji. So he was planning to open a restaurant, which is opening this year, I believe, in Mayfair in London, called, I don't know if you've heard about it, it's called Akoko.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Is he Nigerian?
The owner is Nigerian.
Oh, that's interesting. I've been following them on Instagram, and it looks pretty. So I'm excited for what they put together for sure.
Yeah, so he reached out. And he was telling me they're doing this and stuff. And he was like, "Your name's come up as one of the people doing big things with African food, with your recipes and how you plate them and stuff. And, why don't you come on board with us?" So I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I, really like, "Oh, cool." So I went down to London. I met with him. We spoke for a little bit, and then there were some demonstrations for some other chefs, and there were bigger chefs there. Like there was a guy called Owen. He was the, I think, executive chef for one of Gordon Ramsay's chain. So at first I felt displaced, like, "Yo, this," and then he's telling me about the other chefs they had. Some chef I really respect. His name is Tristan, and so I'm thinking these guys are on a entirely different level from where I am. Like, I guess I've built myself up good enough, but these guys are just not on my level. What am I doing here? So I got to feel like those guys did not have any experience with African food whatsoever. And then there was this other guy, this gentleman there. I can't remember his name, but he does this YouTube channel. Kola is his name. Yes, Kola. And he does this Nigerian food. He has this Nigerian YouTube channel, this food YouTube channel, and he's really popular. I think a lot of people know him with food. Nigerian cuisine, that's what it's called. Yes.
I need to look it up. I don't think I've heard of him.
So he was there to sort of teach the food and what
Oh,
we
to the
do.
those who didn't know the food.
So to the chefs who didn't know the food,
Okay,
yeah.
got it.
And then I was there to sort of validate what Kola was teaching and to look at the not to say that Kola couldn't cook, because Kola was a great cook, but I was sort of there to add my own, my own two cents, like, yep, this is it. And I, because I was already transitioning into fusion food at the time, I was also there to say, you know, how could we twist this? What could we do? So I was like the bridge between Kola and the like the other good chefs. So I was showing them like how we could translate this traditional Nigerian food into this completely, you know, Michelin star product. So I would sort of do that transitioning, and then they would just take what they knew from what I've said and then give it that final Michelin touch or how it could be, you know, spun into something great. So eventually I was asked to be the sous chef for Akoko.
Okay.
And I felt like, and I had such a great time with Aji and the team. And then what happened was, they wanted me to sous chef for Akoko, but I thought I wasn't ready. I thought I'm not ready. This is such a big deal. And then he was telling me how we'll have this guy, they'll train you. So eventually, something happened. I think they lost the head chef.
Okay.
And then we're considering getting another head chef or training me to be the head chef for Akoko. So at this point, I just sort of asked Aji, like, you know what, if this is going to happen, I would like to at least get some form of training. And, you know, would you be able to? So he offered to sponsor me to get me trained.
Okay.
So he then sponsored me through culinary school. I then got trained at Leeds. Finished from Leeds. He also hooked me up with my first job in the industry. I was working at this amazing restaurant called Bistro Vaduvan.
Oh, I think I remember seeing pictures and videos on Instagram that you used to share. So this is them sponsoring you, like, with the anticipation that you'll become a chef at Akoko, right? Akoko.
Yeah, so this was sort of like, him guiding me and trying to get me ready to be the chef for, like, Akoko. But the thing was that being in a restaurant setting is really demanding. So what then happened was I sort of just became a chef that was working in a restaurant, and it was very hard to find time for Akoko. So I would work like 5-6 days in a restaurant, and I'd only have one day to, you know, go to Aji's place and sort of work on Akoko. And I was just sort of losing track on that. And you would work like 17, 18 hours a day, almost 20 hours a day in the restaurant. And then one day you have off, you really just want to sleep.
And then time with your family too, right?
And then I was away from family. I was like miles away. And my wife was pregnant with the second child by this time. So imagine, stress. I'm working 20 hours a day. I'm completely away from family. I'd quit my job. I wasn't getting any money because I was being trained at the same time. So the only money that I was getting was literally what Aji was sort of paying me, almost like a consultancy fee. And you know, bless him, he did his best. But it was just, it wasn't right.
Yeah.
You know, traveling 200 miles back and forth when
wow.
I had a chance to see family. And then there were times where, you know, you finished work at like 1 a.m. and you knew you had to be there by 8 a.m. And I knew my journey home, because London is a big city, my journey home was 2 hours.
That's
so
crazy.
It was like, what's the point? So
yeah.
So that time I was sleeping in my car, getting ready for work the next day. So between like work, and it eventually got too much. And I before then, I had developed a heart condition like a year or two prior.
So you're having to deal with that as well.
So I was dealing with all of that. And obviously, I wasn't trying to say anything to Aji because I was afraid I would get dropped from the project.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter @Item13 Podcast. Thank you.